5. Magnolia Cottage, Fort Rucker, Alabama, 0845 hours, 6 February, 1992. Camp Rucker had been built on a vast area of sandy, worn out from cotton farming land in southern Alabama in the opening months of World War II. It was intended for use first as a division training area and then for the confinement of prisoners of war. An army of workmen had erected thousands of two-story frame barracks, concrete block mess halls, theaters, chapels, headquarters, warehouses, officers' clubs, and all the other facilities needed to accomplish this purpose, including a half-dozen small frame buildings intended to house general officers and colonels. After the war and the repatriation of the POWs, the camp was closed, only to be reopened briefly for the Korean War, where it again served as a division training base. Then it was closed for good. Several years after the Korean War, with Camp Rucker placed on the list of bases to be wiped from the books, the decision was made to greatly expand Army aviation. United States Senator John Sparkman, Democrat, Alabama, to whom a large number of fellow senators owed many favors, suggested that Camp Rucker would be a fine place to have an Army Aviation Center. His fellow senators voted in agreement with their esteemed colleague. Thus, the facility was then reopened and declared a fort, a permanent base. Another army of workmen swarmed over it, building airfields and classrooms and whatever else was needed for a flying army. They also tore down most of the old frame buildings. Most, not all. Chapels and theaters remained, and the warehouses, and the officers' clubs, and the post headquarters building, and 4 of the cottages originally built in the early 1940s to last only 5 to 10 years for the housing of general officers and senior colonels. 2 of these 4, including Building T-1104, which had been renamed Magnolia Cottage, were near the main gate, outside of which was Daleville. They were fixed up as nicely as possible, air-conditioned, furnished with the most elegant furniture to be found in Army warehouses, provided with a kitchen, and became VIP quarters in which distinguished visitors to the post were housed. When Captain Tom Prentice pushed open the door of Magnolia House and waved Beth Wilson into the living room, they found the place was immaculate. There were even fresh flowers in a vase in the center of the dining table.
"Looks fine to me," Beth Wilson said.
Prentice didn't reply directly. Instead, he said, "I've got to make a telephone call. Have a seat."
"That sounds like an order," she snapped.
"Not at all. If you'd rather, stand." He used the telephone in the small kitchen, and, not really curious, she nevertheless managed to hear Prentice's side of the conversation. "Tom Prentice, I'm glad I caught you at home. I need a big favor. Could you come to Magnolia House right now? It shouldn't take more than a few minutes." "No, don't worry about that. He's not here." "I stand in your debt, sir." Beth Wilson wondered what that was all about, but was not going to ask. When Prentice hung up the phone, she said,
"Will you tell me what you want me to do so I can do it and get out of here?"
"There doesn't seem to be anything that needs doing. But we're going to have to wait until somebody comes here." She locked eyes with him. He went on. "You upset your dad with that recitation of what your boyfriend had to think about just about everything. I suppose you know that?"
"Is that really any of your business?"
"Let me explain where I'm coming from," Prentice said coldly. "I admire your father more than I do anyone else I've ever met. If you were to look in a dictionary, there would be a picture of your dad in the definition of officer and gentleman."
"Maybe you should have thought of that when you let Castillo get him drunk and make a fool of himself."
"You're right. I should have," Prentice said. "But your question, Beth, was, is it any of my business that you upset your father by quoting your boyfriend to him and making him damned uncomfortable? And the answer is, yeah, it is my business. It's my duty to do something to straighten you out."
"Straighten me out?"
"Yeah, And your boyfriend, too. He's next on my list.
I can't believe this conversation, Beth said. And I don't think my parents are going to like it a bit when I tell them about it. I'll have to take my chances about that. I'm leaving. I don't have to put up with this.
I can't stop you, of course, but if you leave, you'll walk. And it's a long way from here to Colonel Gremier's quarters. He walked out of the living room and went through the dining room into the kitchen. Beth started for the door, then stopped.
That arrogant bastard is right about one thing. I can't walk from here to the Gremier's, so what do I do?
She was still staring at the door 3 minutes later when it opened, and a middle-aged man wearing a woolen shirt, a zipper jacket, and blue jeans came through it. He looked at her and said, I'm looking for Tom Prentice. I'm in the kitchen, Pete, Prentice called. Be right there. When he came into the living room, Prentice said, Jesus, that was quick. Well, you said you needed the favor, the man said. Do you know Miss Wilson? Prentice asked. I know who she is. Beth, this is Mr. Kowalski. He was my instructor pilot when I went through Blue Flight. He was with Lieutenant Castillo in the desert. Beth nodded coldly at Kowalski. Kowalski looked at Prentice. How'd you hear about that? Kowalski said. From him, Prentice said. What he told the general was something like, there we were, the best Apache pilot in the army and the worst one, flying an Apache over the Iraqi desert at Old Dark Hundred with people shooting at us. Kowalski chuckled. Well, that's a pretty good description, except, as he shortly proved, he was a much better Apache pilot than he or I thought he was.
Would you please tell Miss Wilson about that?